intentionally overlooked. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we're listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
About it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome to the Collision. Ooh, do we have a show today because of the world. The world is making the show. The show is molding the world. We're where sports and politics collide at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. I am normally joined by the great Chuck Modiano and the great Etan Thomas. Etan gave us an amazing pre-record that we're going to air next week with DJ and hip-hop legend and hoops legend Bobito Garcia. Can't wait to show that for y'all. Couldn't quite get it edited in time for this week. It's such a good interview. You're going to have to turn in next Thursday. But for now, believe you me, we have more than enough to discuss. It's myself and the man himself, Chuck Modiano. Chuck, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing all right, DZ. How are you?
Well, here's the thing. There's so much news in the world that we could point to, not the least of which is this big, beautiful bill, which assumedly the right wing is going to be celebrating over July 4th weekend because it looks like it's going to pass, which means they're going to be celebrating the literal deaths of thousands upon thousands of people in this country due to the cutting of health benefits. They're expanding ICE to be better funded than the gosh darn U.S. Marine Corps.
It's tenfold. It's outrageous.
And that also means, you know, I have no love for the present day ICE agent, but imagine the quality of person, and quality is of quotes, who would seek out and join ICE in the current climate, given what we all see that they're doing. People who say, I'd also like to not wear a badge. I'd also like to wear a mask. And I'd also like to harass and hurt brown people.
Yeah, that's a point well taken. That sounds like a vigilante army.
It does. So there's this to talk about. These are the challenges that face us. But of course, amidst horror, there's hope. We're going to speak about Mamdani and the Zohran Mamdani, the mayoral race in New York, the threats by Trump against the person who is going to be, I think, the Democratic nominee, or is, I'm sorry, the Democratic nominee for mayor in New York City, running against criminals and crooks and sexual harassers and deviants of all sort. And yet he'll still get supported by billionaire cash. It's disgusting. But this is where sports and politics collide, Chuck. And I wanted to start by just us playing, I believe it's about 90 seconds, 100 seconds.
Let's get some clouds.
Of Natasha Cloud. WNBA star, currently a league leader in several categories. So, you know, not exactly a pisha, as we used to say in Yiddish. This is a real person here. This is a macher. That means a big old person in the WNBA. And then after we play Natasha Cloud, I think, Chuck, we need to talk about two things. One, why is her voice so lonely?
Woo!
And let's talk some tough truths about that. And two, we need to talk about this just idiotic controversy of white grievance. Just because Caitlin Clark is coming in ninth in the player voting for the WNBA All-Star Game. I know we've talked about this before, Chuck, but I think it's really important to press on this question of ridiculous white grievance, not just to discredit the argument, but to go after something I saw yesterday evening where a comp was made between Caitlin Clark and Jackie Robinson.
Yep.
This needs to be discussed. This needs to be unpacked. Maybe in the process, we can teach people a little bit about what Jackie Robinson actually went through. Use this as an opportunity to discuss that history. Oh, man. Well, I can't play the Natasha Cloud video because we didn't get the chance to edit it. And I was listening to it, and I was so pumped listening to it that I didn't realize how much cussing was in it. So, you know, we got the FCC, all due respect to those fine folk. We can't play that. What we can do, Chuck, is raise the discussion. I mean, Natasha Cloud, what do we know about her right now politically, Chuck?
Oh, I mean, she's been the most outspoken voice on Free Palestine, wearing the kufiya at the All-Star Game last year. I mean, since October of 2023, she has been outspoken. And not like mealy-mouthed outspoken, like this is a genocide outspoken. And again, she was yesterday. And she's really on the pulse of activists. And this is not new. You know, Natasha Cloud, I'll tell you, is my favorite player as a Mystics fan. When I was following her, she just was bringing a lot of energy in her early days. She wasn't a great shooter. That changed, and she became a great shooter. But she was always out front about talking about the George Floyd uprising. She went there with a sign, and she said, if you're silent, I don't F with you, period. And she wrote columns at the Players Tribune. This is someone who's been, it kind of reminds me of a Tom Thomas back in 2003 talking about the Iraq war, and nobody, New York Times, Washington Post, wouldn't print them until some unknown journalist working at, I believe, the Prince George's Gazette named Dave Zirin gave him a platform that got that news out. Well, she has been screaming about police terror. She's been screaming about Palestine, doing it in New York City in front of everyone. She's an all-star player, and she's being ignored. And I'm going to make a statement right now that I believe is objectively true. Natasha Cloud is the number one athlete activist of our time. And I suspect if she wasn't a Black woman playing in the WNBA, this would be universally recognized in sports circles.
Very good. Very well said. And when you say of our time, I think it's important to, and I think you're going to agree with me entirely, but like, I think it's important to qualify that to say, when I think of our time right now, I think of either post January 6th, where the silence among US athletes really did begin. And I'm also thinking about post October 7th, 2020.
Can I rewind the clock on you, DZ, about like 8 months? I would say post George Floyd, because she had signs 8 months before January 6th on the first couple of days out with the people of George Floyd. So I'd like to start the clock, even though she was outspoken before that. In the 2020s, in this decade, she is the number one athlete activist.
Yeah, that's interesting to do it that way. I mean, I just think that, and I talked about this with Howard Bryant, January, you could either call it the Biden election, or you can look at it as I think it's January 6th more, quite frankly. is when you see this kind of turn. Because what did we say in 2020, Chuck? Because you and I have been doing this a long time. We said this was unprecedented since the 1960s and early 70s in terms of the sheer number of athletes who were speaking out following the police murder of George Floyd. I think that needs to be seen as its own era. 2014, we can call it, to 2020, when the Miami Heat first put on those hoods in solidarity with Trayvon. I guess that was 2012. That to me is the starting point. And then the ending point after George Floyd, you could say, after January 6th, after the elections. But you see this great sight, maybe the pandemic as well, we can put it on that. But you see this like profound silencing among so many athletes. And in this period of profound silencing, absolutely, absolutely to Natasha Cloud, because what have been the critical questions? Trump, fascism, now Mamdani, I think, is rising to that level, like where you stand on Mamdani and Palestine. Right. Those to me are the big four.
And she's been vocal on Palestine for a long time, by the way. Okay, just a little counterpoint, DC, a little counterpoint, two little counterpoints. Part of me, I don't separate January 6th from the 8 months that happened before, particularly in DC and covering DC. I see that as one continuum, because I always say you can't understand January 6th if you don't understand how many times people were tear gassed in D.C. in those same streets. Because when I was sitting on that lawn, standing on that lawn, I was like, when's the tear gas coming? I mean, when's the tear gas? I'm looking at the other indie journalists that I was with, and we were like, when's it coming? And I think it's something that almost needs to be combined to understand the police role, who were villains but, you know, propped up as heroes. And then from just a neat Drowning point of view in sports, we love to say who's the best player of the decade, who's this. So just starting at 2020 just has a neatness to it that I like as well. But I'm not gonna like die on my sword over this argument.
No, I hear you. I hear you. Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is also, and this is worthwhile discussion. Because we did see that backlash hit DC post George Floyd. Yeah. We saw it hit it hard, and you certainly saw it in other places too. But but like you also saw through that fall, the intervention again by the WNBA in the Warnock, what was it, Purdue? I mean, I even forget the clown he ran against. No, I think Purdue was against Ossoff. The point is, against the WNBA owner, of course, against the WNBA owner.
Oh, yeah, Kelly Loeffler. Yeah, crazy woman.
And that was now with the Trump administration after condemning him after January 6th, just another craven millionaire hypocrite. But just a very interesting thing went down there with the WNBA saying, you're darn right we're political, you're darn right we're front and center. But then you saw, for example, in January of this year, Dejounte Carrington did some anti-Trump stuff and was just like buried for it. And you haven't really heard much from her since. She at least put her foot in the water. But so many of these athletes, so many of these male athletes have chosen silence. So many of the big names from BLM have chosen silence. So many of the big names against war have chosen silence. And most of all, so many big names in the face of a genocide in Palestine have chosen silence, but not Natasha Cloud.
Nope.
Not Natasha Consistent. Cloud. And Consistent. Just so you know, Chuck, I'm currently in discussions for a Natasha Cloud interview.
Well, let's do it. I was thinking about that as well. I was going to broach that, but go ahead.
Yes. No. And this is something that absolutely needs to happen times 100.
Yep.
In this space, you know what I'm saying? Like in the space of the collision.
You think CNN's going to uplift her? You think ESPN's going to uplift her? No, this is our territory.
Well, Fox News is uplifting her just in the most horrible ways possible.
That's right. Of course.
You know, they are uplifting her.
That's what they do. I've actually come to the conclusion, and it's a weird conclusion, that in some ways, when all media stays silent, Fox News, they actually help in some ways because they give horrible media attention. But that media attention is actually better than being ignored. Like, ignored is the worst because then you don't know it exists. Bad media attention. Now, it may not be good for Natasha Cloud, so let me say that right. I say that very, like, with caution because I want Natasha Cloud's safety and I don't want her safety compromised from what I think is good for society. So let's be clear about that. But if we're just looking at, you know, a lot of times I would cover rallies, at Free Palestine rallies, and Fox News would be the only ones to cover it, to try to clown it, but they gave it attention. So it's a weird dynamic, but we may be hitting that point where now, you know, the mainstream media cannot not cover it.
Well, what's so terrible right now in our society is that you have this genocide going on and we all see it and we are constantly being gaslit by the Democratic Party as to what is actually happening over there. We're being gaslit, I would argue, also by the silence of athletes, entertainers. I'm not putting it all on athletes. Let's just call it cultural figures.
Yeah.
Like, they're not entirely, of course. Credit to those who have spoken out. But I mean, a couple of big actors have been phone banking for Mamdani, for example, in New York. Jewish actors, Ilana Glazer and Hannah Einbender, you know, both very famous. They're both Jewish. They've been fighting for Mamdani. But in the large sense, there's been the choice of silence. And, you know, I think that what it comes down to at the end of the day, at long last, when we look at it, is we have to look at the question of fear and the ways in which they have been able, and I'm talking about the U.S. government, the Democratic Party, certainly Zionist organizations as well. And let's all remember, as we talk about this, the majority of pro-Israel Zionists in the United States are Christian Zionists. And in fact, statistically, there are more Christian Zionists than there are Jews in the United States.
Yeah. And Kofi, you got it.
No, I just want to keep just pounding that point.
Pound, my bad.
And so it's just, this is what I think, Chuck, why there's been this silence. And it really bothers me so much to no end. The first, I think, is just straight up racism. And we've just been, and racism doesn't mean that an athlete is thinking about Palestinian people and spitting on the ground or something. Racism, when in this case, as I say it, Chuck, means, and of course some people do that, I'm not saying there aren't gutter racists in this country, and many of them frankly are in our government, I'm talking about the racism that allows us to ignore all this death that I think a whole generation of people have been raised with since 9/11. And when I say since 9/11, now we're talking about young athletes, you know, that's 24 years ago. Like, just raised with this idea that Middle Eastern life is somehow expendable. And somehow, you know, so it's like, oh, you know, 50 people here, 100,000 there. I mean, it becomes numbers. And of course, you have to ignore them at the risk of either succumbing to full unadulterated racism, which a lot of people don't want to do because they think racism is bad, although it's certainly back in fashion, or they ignore it to avoid from just losing their minds. Like, right. Oh my God. Or you can fight. And Tasha Cloud is choosing to fight. Yeah. So one thing I think really is the racism. A second thing is the fear. Like, who really wants to go through the punishment and public dragging that groups like AIPAC, the JDL are going to put them through?
Yeah.
For daring to say that Palestinian lives matter. And then you've got the third reason, Chuck, which is the biggest difference to me in 2020, and that's the explosion of the gambling addiction economy in sports and how that has turned salaries so gargantuan that the risk becomes really high for speaking out as well, because we're starting to talk about generational wealth, the likes of which was unimaginable a few years ago. I mean, Muhammad Ali went bankrupt because he chose to stand up to the Vietnam War. John Carlos was working as a groundskeeper and chopping furniture in his home with an axe for firewood because he dared raise a fist during the anthem in 1968. So this part hurts too, because yes, there's a lot to sacrifice now in terms of money, but man, have people sacrificed more,
right,
historically. And Muhammad Ali visiting Palestinian refugee camps in the early 70s, while a lot of players say they stand in Ali. It's tough not to be upset about it. I'm trying not to chide, but when there's a genocide going on, it raises the stakes on all these questions. And Tasha Cloud is showing us that it is possible. And my last point, Chuck, and then I'll let you have at it, I'm sorry to go on so long, is I would argue that Mamdani is such a sensation for two reasons. And frankly, it's even a little bit different in New York than it is for the rest of the country. And this is reflecting in the news coverage. He's made his remember, I'm from New York City. He's made his inroads in New York by just being disciplined as hell, saying a basic truth that this is not an affordable city. This is no longer a city that working class people can live with any measure of dignity. And so we are going to change that. Powerful. And it connects with the one half of New Yorkers who actually do live below the poverty line. Second is that Mamdani is not saying that my first trip after becoming mayor would be to visit Tel Aviv. And he was the only candidate to say, no, I'll visit with the Jewish community in New York City, but my job is not to be the mayor of Tel Aviv.
That's right.
And so the mere fact that he's being a voice and a symbol of saying genocide is wrong, BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions is moral. Like, just him saying that, I feel, and this is certainly partly true in New York, but I feel it nationally, it's like people are exhaling. Like, oh my goodness, we're not being gaslit by a politician.
Right.
And the people are responding. I mean, it's almost like a weight off our shoulders. And so when you have Cloud, though, defend Mamdani, then you see that also that beautiful ripple effect, that dialectical effect, where Cloud stands up, Mamdani stands up, Cloud then supports Mamdani, Cloud defends Mamdani in the face of Trump's threats to have him imprisoned and expelled from the country. Are you kidding me? Good luck, buddy. And so this is my general sense of the situation, Chuck. And I know I went on a lot. I really do want to hear what you have to say about all that.
Keep going.
Oh, no, it's just to me then the value of a Natasha Cloud and the hope that she can act as a point of inspiration. But also, I think Mamdani shows that maybe we don't need these cultural figures like maybe we thought we once did. You know, maybe they can just come along for the ride.
That's a good point. I mean, and that's where I'm at. I've evolved a lot. I mean, we've been arguing this question, you know, for like a couple of decades now, right? And I've evolved on a few levels on this question, in that the people lead the celebrities, the celebrities don't lead the people. And there are exceptions, and Tasha Cloud is actually an exception, and Muhammad Ali is actually an exception. But if you go through almost all of the other people who spoke out at some time, they were a reflection after the people had an uprising. You go back to the 60s and we glorify the 60s, but people were in the street in mass doing sit-ins, doing the civil rights marches, getting hosed. This was what was going on in the news. Same thing with more recent movements against police terror. So gave people the wink. I love Colin Kaepernick and him speaking out and how he helped that movement put forward. But that happened in 2016, 2 years after Ferguson, and one of those demonstrations was at St. Louis Rams Stadium that I was in, and he was the other player. And I don't think he's speaking out if there's not a movement. So with the way I look at things today, if we get a Natasha Cloud who's just courageous, then this is a bonus. But we, the people, have to realize our own power, our own agency, and give them cover so that their career may not be completely ruined if they do speak out. And we're starting to hit those tipping points right now. We're starting to do that. But the people lead the celebrities. So I always have felt
that in some ways, by waiting for a celebrity and waiting for a savior, we are denying our own agency to what can I do in my community, because I'm not going to lose millions because I'm broke, and see what, how I can help. And if they come along for the ride, and if they help out, and they embolden it, and they bring it to new masses, then that is wonderful too. But we're going to leave them.
No, exactly. We are going to leave them and leave them behind. So props to Natasha Cloud. And Chuck, there's so much I want to discuss with you. I think talking about Caitlin Clark is really important. But yeah, since we have 5 minutes to the break, we do have to slip in some news that just broke late last night on a sports tip that DeAndre Ayton is going to be the starting center for the Los Angeles Lakers, along with LeBron James and Luka Doncic. Here's my call, Chuck. I've been thinking about this a lot. LeBron James is right now experiencing something that no great NBA star has ever experienced before. No top 10, I should say, NBA star has ever experienced before, with the possible exception of Wilt Chamberlain. But no other star has faced this, where they are, and we could go through them, where they are established on a team with a certain voice and authority, including being like a de facto general manager, and losing that power to another star player. They are building for Luka Doncic right now, not for LeBron James.
I don't see
LeBron
it the same
James
way.
Who's entering his 23rd season.
I don't see it the same way. DZ, isn't DeAndre Ayton exactly who they need? Isn't the center position what was lacking? And why, you know, I think Rudy Gobert had a game with 24 points and 17 rebounds. Like, isn't that their biggest hole? And if they were to sign Chris Paul, who's a free agent, at a minimum, who brought out the best in Ayton, is that not a potential championship team?
Great question. First, rumors strong that Paul is going back to the Clippers to end his career.
Okay.
That's the first thing. But a great point that Paul would have, who played 82 games last year, one of only a dozen players to do so at age 40. Props to Chris Paul, even though he does certain things that I can't say over the air to other players when they jump up for rebounds, which have no place in the game of basketball. And I'll just leave it at that. The second thing, though, is if DeAndre Ayton is the answer, then we are asking the wrong question. I mean, they signed Ayton because they screwed up again and again, signing some of the folks that were actually out there that work better with Luka. They need some, like the Miles Turners, the Brooke Lopez's, the... who would be the great one who just signed with somebody? They're just some good people out there. Like, what they need is the rim runner, the guy who can take the lob, or what they need is the three-point shooting big man who Luka can just throw it to all day and watch him sink threes. LeBron as well, what a passer. I mean, haven't we learned that about Luka and LeBron already, that they need perimeter guys? I mean, who can take those amazing passes? Ayton is a post player. He's got no three. He's got no rim.
Everybody else a perimeter guy? I mean, like, here's the thing. I think you're a little down on Ayton. I think I have a higher opinion of DeAndre Ayton than you do. So we'll start there. But what I saw last year is also a team that it wasn't just that they didn't have a great center. They had an absolute void at center. In the last round, they just went small ball and just started playing small ball, and we're going to give up the rebound. So we're talking about DeAndre Ayton, an above average center, walking into a void, a guy who could get you double figures in rebounds, who you know, they're going to be lobbed. You have great passers like Luka and LeBron that will get them those pieces. And against some teams, DeAndre Ayton may not have to play a lot of minutes if they're a small team. But against a big team, I think DeAndre Ayton is the piece. I was of the opinion that unless they get a center, they have no chance. And I think they got an above average one. So we're gonna wait and see on this one. And you're gonna either come back and say I was wrong, or I'm gonna come back and say you were wrong. But I'm good to wait.
Yeah, I mean, what choice do we have? And because this is going to be, you know, one of the most high-profile teams in the NBA this year, and as well, mark my words, one of the most disappointing, and also mark my words, there will be a LeBron soap opera this year. It's going to be very interesting. And the LeBron piece, I really want you to think about, because think about it like this. Even when Magic was better than Kareem, Kareem was the captain, the leader, the person people look to. Go down the list. Bill Russell, the Celtics, Kobe after Shaq leaves. You know, like you never had, and of course, Magic and Larry Bird as well, you know, who had shorter careers, but were always in that driver's seat in so many respects. Magic, of course, with the ear of Jeannie Buss. Magic and Kareem was frankly an extremely unique situation, but still, you didn't have this situation with LeBron. If you look at the contracts they're doing, if you look at how they're setting up for maybe a future run at Giannis, I mean, this Laker management, which by the way, I think is profoundly incompetent for how they've wasted LeBron James's years there. Profoundly incompetent. I think they're now like, okay, we need to set up for the future of the 26-year-old, not the 40-year-old. And on the one hand, I get it. But on the other hand, we're still talking about LeBron James. And someone put out the other day, like, if LeBron James, let me ask you this, Chuck, and then we'll go to break. I'm sorry we're going on so long. Two quick questions for you. If LeBron James is offered straight up for Kawhi Leonard, who says no on the Clippers? And the second question is, if LeBron James is offered for a center who would be insanely good with Luka Doncic by the name of Karl Anthony Towns.
Right.
Who says no?
Right. I mean, I think you're going to take someone who could play many, many more years over one that would be a three. But I disagree with – I'm disagreeing with you a lot today, and it's cool because we're going to find out.
Wait. But answer the direct question, though. Who says no if LeBron is offered for Karl?
I don't think you can say no if you're setting up.
But are the Lakers – do the Lakers say no to that, or do the Knicks if that trade is put up?
Oh, the Knicks have to go for it. The Knicks would have to take LeBron, in my opinion, because the Knicks have a very short window next year when you have injuries to the Celtics and Indiana, and you want to beat the West. And in a couple of years, the Spurs and Wemby are going to run the whole dynasty thing. So after maybe an OKC dynasty, I think the Knicks window, you have to do anything you can to win next year. That's another.
You think the Knicks and the Lakers would say yes to a LeBron-Karl trade?
I think the Knicks would. And I think the Lakers could.
Wow, I love that trade. Kawhi for LeBron is also interesting, just because the Kawhi injury question.
Making stuff up right now, or are there these rumors?
Live rumors. Okay. Not the Towns one anymore after Ayton, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But because I would have loved to have seen that on both coasts.
Yeah.
But the LeBron stuff is – LeBron's unhappiness is very real. LeBron's unhappiness at his absence of influence is a great deal. And frankly, if I'm the Lakers, I'm like, yo, we did sign your son in the second round for like a multi-year contract, which never happens to second-round draft picks usually. How about you just put us in the driver's seat? And while I understand that argument, like, yo, LeBron, we've done a lot for you. How about you just maybe just be a mentor to Luka now? But on the other hand, I just think the Lakers management, Rob Pelinka, has not earned that confidence from LeBron.
Maybe. I will say this. I reject the comment that the Lakers have been bad because they actually won a championship. And if you could win even one championship, says this Knicks fan who has never witnessed one championship his entire life, then I think no matter what you did your job, no matter how many other areas that you messed up in. That said, I just think that they could contend for a title. Maybe I'm overvaluing DeAndre.
You are, but that's okay.
Okay, we'll see. We'll see.
We will see.
Okay, we'll see. I think Chris Paul, I think we're missing the point, but they really have 2 points and LeBron and Luka passers who will give him some easy points like Chris Paul did. But we'll see, yeah.
Man, this is really interesting talk, but we got to go to break, right? I could talk about NBA stuff like this free agent world all day, but we got to kick it to the WNBA because it's much more serious. We didn't even talk about Dame Lillard and a move by the Bucks, which to me is so desperate and gobsmacking in releasing Dame Lillard. Mm-hmm. I can't even talk about it correctly, but let's go to break right now. We'll be back right after this. Chuck and me and Chuck, Caitlin Clark, White Grievance. Will it ever end? It's so tiresome, so angering. We'll be back right after this on The Collision. Ain't nowhere to run to. There ain't nothing here for free.
I don't like my life, I gut it, rebuild it. Keep nothing but God and my children. I kill the devil wherever he resides. Even if he hiding in me, he got to die. I killed little Jason, he was only 15. Sold his good traits together, made Ali. Filled his lungs with the Quran until he breathed. Let him walk, but kept him on a short leash. Here he stand now, 17-year-old man child. Ain't asked nobody for a month. Hand out. He's trying to carry heaven on his back. Jump the broom with a stranger. Ain't never looked back. What he know about how the world spin? Bless his heart. He a virgin, never even had a girlfriend. Wanna be a man so bad that he can taste it. His family fell apart and he's trying to replace it. You'll find in him a heart that's second to none. But I know, oh soul, that his lessons ain't done. So I stand willing to kill him again. If to grow, he got to shed his skin and let it be done.
Beautiful stuff, beautiful stuff. Yo, Magic Mike, who did we just listen to? That really moved me, man.
Brother Ali, freedom ain't free.
Are you perhaps referring to Brother Ali, who was a guest on The Collision?
Of course, man.
You had Brother Ali on. I missed that one.
You did miss that one.
I would have loved to have been part of that one.
It was espectacular, señor. It was amazing. But, yo, folks can check that out on the archives. Chuck, so much Sturm and Drang, that means so much noise representing just foolishness, idiocy, racism, white grievance about Caitlin Clark of the WNBA coming in ninth in the player voting for the All-Star game and first in the fan voting, and the conclusion by some very big names like Dick Vitale and Christine Brennan is that this is just some straight up jealousy by WNBA players against Caitlin Clark, who has made them rich. And because of this, it shows a tremendous flaw, if not a level of racism or reverse racism against Clark that has other players thinking she's whack. Now, I have so much to say about this, Chuck. Yeah. So much. Not the least of which is that, and I want to start with this, Chuck, just my little thing, and then I want you to get in the full analysis. Sure. Caitlin Clark, who has been praised by folks like us for saying, all right, she might be the avatar of all this racism, but you know, it's largely beyond her control because she has spoken out against that. And while that's certainly true, she's also part of a three-person crew on her team of white players that they call themselves the Tres Leches, which means three milks. And that sounds funny, I guess, but one of them is MAGA.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
you're just kind of like, okay, so race war, is that what we're going to do in response to this? Yeah. But I digress, Chuck. The very basics. Caitlin, ninth in the players, first with the fans. They're calling it reverse racism. They're using white grievance, which, by the way, could not annoy me more given the amount of power white supremacists have right now. Like, what is your grievance that you don't get to star in original programming on BET? I mean, this is the level we're getting to. So throwing it to you, Chuck, what's so wrong with this argument?
I mean, it is so, so wrong. And the argument itself is ridiculous. And I would argue, based on what the WNBA players are tasked to do, 9 is actually kind of high. Okay. And I know people, it's the 9th guard. They are tasked to only measure this season. Okay. Only measure this season. I've tweeted a lot about it, but what I really want to do is start with a tweet that's come from somebody else, which is, I Talk Hoops. It's at Trendy Hoops Stars. Check them out. It does great analysis of WNBA. And here, let me start. Caitlin Clark is shooting 29.5% from 3, has only played in 56% of the season, and leads the entire WNBA in turnovers. But instead of respecting the players' votes, people are pointing to TV ratings, charter flights, and merchandise sales as if those are all-star qualifications. They are not. No one is denying Caitlin Clark's talent, but insisting she must be voted higher regardless of performance isn't about fairness. It is about control. And that control is enforced through media, outrage, online harassment, and subtle colored commentary. And that control, sadly to say, includes Christine Brennan, who has had a great pioneering career, but is ending it in a very terrible way and giving legitimacy to this Caitlin mob. And I have to call out Christine Brennan's tweet because she said, quote, Caitlin Clark finishing first in the All-Star Game fan voting and 9th in player voting reveals an obvious and crucial disconnect that WNBA leadership would be wise to address. I need to stress that last part. She's not saying I disagree. She is saying WNBA leadership needs to address the WNBA players who correctly voted her 9th, not this delusional mob that put her first, that put 4 Fever players in the top 9, that put 8 Fever players in the top 40, and ranked again Kate Martin, her Iowa teammate. So if we left it up to the fans, we would see a half of the squad being Fever players and Kate Martin, who's a sub on the team with more deserving players, missing. If we want to have a real conversation, we have to address this delusional Caitlin mob. And Christine Brennan gives legitimacy to that mob. And Dick Vitale, who has nothing but positive things to say about every player he's critical, that hurts as well. And then when you have the likes of the Charlie Kirks and the Riley Gaines and the James Woods with millions of followers pushing white grievance but know nothing about basketball, we have a situation that is far bigger than the WNBA.
And I think there's something that I can just put a little end on this. Like, how could she come in 9th? How could she come in 9th? She's averaging 19 points, 9 assists. And the response to that is so easy. One, there are some incredible players in the WNBA this year. Look up what Nafisa Collier's doing. Ooh. Look up some of the other players that are just killing it. See some of Paige Becker's passes, for goodness sakes. And on that alone, my friend, you could argue that she was lucky to finish 9th. Not just because of there's so many great players, but because, and I can't believe this has to be stressed, she's only played in 9 games. Go to the WNBA official page. Hit the statistics button. Caitlin Clark should be 2nd in assists, but she's not. Why? Because she hasn't played enough games. So what it becomes is like a demand, a cudgel, dare I say a whip, to say, you better vote for Caitlin Clark. It was the same thing with the Olympics. Like, you better put her on the Olympic team. It has like this odor of almost like a threat. Although, as you said, Christine Brennan called for a direct threat.
Yep.
From WNBA ownership to the players.
That's right.
So there is something ugly about this. It's and ugly. It gets uglier for me for 2 reasons. One is, and you've talked about this ad nauseum, Chuck, and I think this is so important. These are people who know nothing about women's sports, care nothing about women's basketball, other than their ability. They don't watch it. All they care about is the ability to use Caitlin Clark, straight white woman, as a cudgel against players that they paint as black and LGBTQ. Obviously, that's an incredibly broad stereotype, but they play into it hard to defend their precious Caitlin Clark. And it's so repellent on the face of it because it's a disrespect to women's sports. And Chuck, the part of it that the right is now using that has me kind of incensed, but also like sort of, you know, like smiling, and my mouth is watering a little bit too, because because we can get them with this, is they're daring to compare Caitlin Clark to Jackie Robinson.
Yep. So I don't even want to say their name, but there was a medium sports announcer who said that she's the most discriminated athlete since Jackie Robinson. I don't want to give this nonsense.
Don't give their name, but where did they come from?
No, but I don't want to give this nonsense any attention, but here's what I do want to give it attention. There's not 1% of me that believes that the person who wrote that believes that. But what I do believe is we're in a very dangerous sports media territory, because the Caitlin mob is so big that when corporate media plays to their delusion, their ratings go up, their clicks go up. If you go against the Caitlin mob, your ratings go down. And there's nothing in the sports media history that would say, I'm going to deny better ratings. There's no editor who's going to come down. They're going to say, nah, I need you to talk more about Caitlin and how she's wrong. And it's not just in the sports media. It goes to other media, to the politicians, to the names of the Charlie Kirk and what we said. So when when corporate media and collides with the mob in a way that she's a cash cow and a machine, I am very scared, because every time that this crowd says something, they take up for it and they amplify it. You know what they didn't amplify? They didn't amplify that Angel Reese was ranked number 12th most deserving front court player. And you know why Angel Reese was? Because it's consistent with Caitlin. Angel Reese got off to a very slow start. And the WNBA players, only judging this season, penalized her for a slow start. They didn't value her NBA record last year, because last year wasn't the task that they were given. They give her number 12. So where are all the articles about Angel Reese and you selectively take Caitlin Clark? Angel Reese getting a low grade destroys your narrative, that these black WNBA players hate white people and hate Caitlin. It falls apart. So they're deliberately skipping facts. I'd like to see the article on Angel Reese. They're consistent. These people who are, in my view, just fanning flames of white supremacy are not.
And I respect that you don't want to talk about the Jackie Robinson piece, but I'm sorry. It needs to be repeated and re-repeated.
You're right. I thought it was so ridiculous that, but go ahead. Yeah.
No, but the part of it that's so enraging is that Caitlin Clark has a right-wing noise industry behind her.
She's an industry.
Made up of politicians, people in Congress who wanted to hold hearings because they said she was getting fouled too much.
But they wanted assault charges off a hard foul that we've seen thousands of times.
Yeah, Jackie Robinson wasn't getting people saying that, oh, we have to bring the federal government to bear on the racist treatment of Jackie Robinson. So that's all you need to say. Give me a break. It's offensive. It's stupid. It has no place in the discourse beyond amplifying idiocy from the right wing noise machine, which then makes us all looking side to side like, oh, got to respond to this. Got to respond to this. I just look at these things sometimes as like, do you really want to have a debate about what Jackie Robinson went through? Do you really think you know the facts about this? Do you really think you have the right to use his name like that in defense of white supremacy?
Yeah.
What in the blue heck are they doing? And I got to say one last thing about all this, and I know it's a lot, the whole Caitlin Clark, you know, the discourse around it can feel very tired and very old, but we got to make the point. Part of this is also is that they are searching for grievance. It's like, how is their grievance immigration now when they're funding ICE as a domestic Gestapo with more money than the Marines? How is their grievance going to be affirmative action when they are crushing, crushing the idea that anybody deserves a leg up other than white people who are the real victims of racism. It's like, how can they? So it's like they're on the look for more grievance because it's the only thing that fuels their narrative and fuels themselves. And they'll go after Mamdani. That's a tougher one for them, though, because it's like grievance, grievance, grievance. Dude's going to be mayor. Dude's going to be mayor.
You've already closed the deal on that one?
Unless there's an intervention by the federal government, I feel extremely confident that two of the most unpopular politicians in the history of the city of New York cannot beat him.
I hope you're right. I'm not ready to close the door because just the amount of billions that those people will get and misinformation. But I certainly hope you're right. And
misinformation, Chuck, only works when it's an established product, when it's an unestablished product. Adams has already shown us who he is. That's his popularity is below 20% in the city, Chuck.
Point made.
Andrew Cuomo just lost after being up 40 points.
Two points made. And your third point, which I'll go back to Jackie Robinson, as you were talking, sometimes I change my mind like kind of quickly because I bypassed it. But I think you're right. I think we do have to uplift that Jackie Robinson comment in a correct way because you know what? It got a bunch of light. It was a small time under a thread and it got 80 likes. And there are a lot of people who believe just that. And if people believe that, like we could be like, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. But part of Trumpism is people saying that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life. And then millions getting behind that ridiculous thing. This is the crowd and the white supremacy that we are dealing with. So I do believe we have to combat it, but we have to combat it in a very strategic way. So one thing I think was a mistake during Trump 1 is everybody in the news used Trump 1 and blasted him all the time and every crazy comment, and it worked often to his benefit. So when people are making crazy comments, personally, I've a very, like on social media, I go underneath the thread. I will go and fight in the thread. So I interrupt with facts a lot of what this, this white nationalist crowd is seeing, but I won't go over the thread. I won't promote every crazy person who says intentionally white supremacist thing to get a rise. So I think you have to be, it's not that you don't battle it. It's how you battle it, where you battle it in their space, not make a deal where you uplift your visibility and their visibility at the same time. Otherwise, we have people like Laura Loomer becoming lightning rod, saying the most ridiculous, absurd, hateful white supremacist thing you've ever heard. So you have to be strategic.
And she has the ear of the president. Yay!
That part.
Well, we're just about to wrap up time, Chuck. Chuck, we're hitting July 4th weekend, Independence Day of a country that would bring shame to a den of scoundrels. So I ask you, Chuck, is there anything going on Independence Day that folks can do in this area other than shut themselves off in their rooms and turn on music loud and turn off the lights? Is there anything folks can do this Independence Day to register their own dissent that you recommend?
I feel bad with the question. Normally every Thursday, I have the lineup of everything that's going on this weekend. And I've been working on stuff and I've been a little out of it. I'm like, all right, I'm going to check after the show. So I don't have what's going on, but I'm sure a lot is going on. And I hope we mention it on other WPFW shows because I've never seen a July 4th weekend where there wasn't a lot of people trying to educate the public on what this history and U.S. history really is about. And it is about based off of genocide, it is based off of slavery. And no matter how much we change the education books, it doesn't change what actually happened. So take a look, but I don't have the specific answer for you right now.
You know what, Chuck? I feel like I just saw Michael Jordan take the floor for the Wizards. The idea that Chuck Modiano does not have the lineup of protests. I mean, it's like seeing one of the all-time greats. I feel like I'm listening to Willie Mays and the Mets or Johnny Unitas on the Chargers.
Oh, no. All right, I'm going to dust myself off and come back next week, but I know somebody in WPFW will correct it. I mean, I can start furiously looking for flyers.
No.
There's something going on.
Let me just keep it going. Patrick Ewing on the Sonics. Patrick Ewing on the Magic.
Oh no,
Art Monk on the Jets.
It was a Patrick Ewing on the Magic. I don't think you can get worse than that. I mean,
Brian Mitchell on the Eagles.
That better.
Mike is throwing in suggestions. I hope they went out on air.
Those are Joe Namath on the Rams. That's not too good.
Yeah, Mike, Art Monk on the Jets. Mike, that was the ultimate.
That was a sad time.
That was a very sad time. Yo, for Mike, Magic Mike, always on point. Chuck Modiano, you're the best. Everybody out there, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace. Check the exercise. Check the word overseer. Like a sample. Repeat it very quickly and approve for example. Overseer. 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 Officer. 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 Yeah, officer from overseer.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
The Youth Resiliency Institute's annual Cherry Hill Arts and Music Waterfront Festival is back on Friday, July 4th, 1 until 10 p.m. at Middle Branch Park in Baltimore. Music, food trucks, children's activities, vendors, art exhibition, and more in celebration of the 15th anniversary of the Youth Resiliency Institute. Performers include Navasha Dea, Cecily, DJ Grin, and Fusion Orchestra, and more. Details at cherryhillfest.com or 443-813-2116. WPFW, Building a Better World, one broadcast at a time.
The Birchmere presents Omar, July 17th, Hubert Laws, July 20th, Hiroshima, July 24th, and Sheila E., July 30th. Details at thebirchmere.com.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world one broadcast at a time.
This July 4th, WPFW presents Higher, the poetic genius of Sekou Sundiata and the musical innovation of Sly Stone. From 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., we begin at 11 a.m. with an airing of Sekou Sundiata's 51st Dream State, a multimedia meditation on empire. At 1 p.m., our multifaceted exploration of Sly Stone kicks off until 7 p.m. with tributes curated by Brother Jamil, James Funk, and DJ Lance Reynolds. Full schedule at WPFWFM.org. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
We are going to march to the White House, and we are going to deliver a message. Trump must go now.
This 4th of July, RefuseFascism.org is saying, don't celebrate Trump's fascist America. Protest. Don't barbecue with family. While immigrant families are being ripped apart, troops are in the streets, elected officials are being threatened and arrested, and fascism is advancing. No, the lesson of history is that fascism must be defeated before it becomes too late. That is why on July 4th at 2 p.m. at Logan Circle, RefuseFascism.org will rally and then march to the White House to declare independence from Trump's fascist America in the name of humanity. Then, right in front of the White House, they will raise the biggest chant heard round the world.
Trump must go now!
Trump must go now!
Details and to get involved, refusefascism.org. Yeah!
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers